on this one. Here. Okay. Very good. Sahana vavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahavirjan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. Oh, it was one of those days. I'm a little. Thank you. Chaitanyam sarvagam sarvam sarvabhutaguhashayam yat sarva vishayatitam tasmai sarva vide namaha. Good. Thank you for mentioning that. Welcome to you all, and welcome also to many students who are attending this class online. We're finally finishing this chapter 15. The chapters are getting longer. This chapter was 54 verses. Next chapter, I think, is 74 verses. I'll talk about that next week when we begin the chapter. Remember, the chapter had this unusual name, na anyat anyat prakaranam, na anyat anyat prakaranam, which means one thing cannot become another. And we talked about it at the very beginning of this chapter, and we noticed that the second verse has nothing to do with the first verse. So I suggested that that was like a hypothesis that was going to be proved through the course of the chapter. One thing cannot become another is an indication of the unchanging nature of consciousness, which was indeed a major topic throughout this chapter. So that was Shankara's rather cryptic way of introducing the chapter, a chapter which is mostly focused on unchanging consciousness, and he used that expression, one thing cannot become another, which we discussed at the very beginning of the class. Before I forget, I want to apologize to the online students. I failed to put the slides up on the video. I put a note, I think most of you saw my comment on the video that said gave you the link to our website where you can find the PDF version. And if ever I forget to put the slides up, you all know you can go to our website and the entire PDF is there. Okay, with that introduction complete, we come to the final verses. Four verses left in the chapter, and it's conventional at the end of a very important work or chapter to discuss the phala, the fruits, the benefits of the teaching at the end. That's a convention that's pretty much always followed, and we'll see that in today's class as well. Shankaracharya describing what is the benefit of discovering the truth that your consciousness is unchanging. And just to round that in our experience, how wonderful it is when you get it, and when you're, like right now, when you're experiencing dizziness, or if you experience sadness, or anxiety, or anything else, how wonderful it is to know that you're okay. Because consciousness doesn't get dizzy. Consciousness doesn't get sad. The consciousness, which is your essential nature, remains utterly unaffected. So that, in a very brief way, summarizes the phala, the benefit of these teachings. We'll see Shankara's explanation of that phala. Huh? Why aren't I getting that here? Sorry, I got another problem here. Why is that that? So, if for those of you wondering what's going on, I'm advancing the slides in the room. Oh, that's why. Okay. The slides are not advancing. Let me see if I can relaunch this. All these buttons, a little tricky. So, that was supposed to relaunch it, and it's not launched. All right. So, why? Give me just... I come out here early and set up the system, but sometimes unexpected problems occur. So, we'll try this again. Okay, shift F5. There we go. You have to learn all this arcane stuff. If you're using PowerPoint, you need to know the difference between F5 and shift F5. Okay. I've been using PowerPoint for a long time. Okay, now we're ready. Sorry for the interruption. Yatoktam brahma yo veda, yatoktam brahma yo veda, hanupadanavarjitam, hanupadanavarjitam, tatokte navidhanena, yatokte navidhanena, sasatyam naiva jayate, sasatyam naiva jayate. Yaha veda, one who knows Brahma. Brahman meaning the reality because of which you exist. So often Brahman becomes a very abstract reality. This is you. The reality because of which you exist, of course, is consciousness. Prajnanam Brahma, the one of the Mahavakyas, which says that consciousness is Brahman. These are not two separate fundamental realities. There cannot be two separate fundamental realities. So Brahma here, Brahman, in the undeclined form, is your consciousness, the truth because of which you exist. Yaha Veda, one who knows that Brahman, yatoktam, as taught in this chapter. And how is it taught in this chapter? Hana upadana Varjitam, Brahman being free, and let me use the word consciousness here. Consciousness being Varjitam, free from Hana and Upadana. From my gestures, you might get the meaning. Hana means rejection, Upadana means acceptance. So, Brahman consciousness is not something you can accept or reject. It's not a thing in the world. My guru liked to make this particular joke in Hindi. He thought it was funny. I don't know if it is or not. You can be the judge of it. Even when he was talking about not being one more thing in the world, he would say, "Aur ek cheez nahi hai." And I, as an American, I find it interesting that the word cheese in Hindi means thing. Anyway, that's language for you. So, Brahman is not one more thing in the world. Brahman is you. You are the one who can do rejection. You are the one who can do acceptance. Therefore, Brahman consciousness is not subject to either rejection or acceptance. Brahman is not an object. Brahman is you. And going back to Brahman as in his more abstract sense of the absolute reality because of which everything exists, that absolute reality can only be known as yourself. That's what Tatvamasi means. We won't get into that right now. But the reality because of which everything exists can only be known as the consciousness which is your truth. true nature. That's exactly what the Mahavakya Tattvamasi reveals. Okay, continuing here. Simple Sanskrit. He says that you gain this knowledge yatoktena vidhanena, by means of this vidhana, this methodology. Yatha uktena, as taught in this chapter, as taught throughout this text. And it's wonderful when we use that word explicitly. Vidhana means method. Oftentimes we use the word jnanena, through knowledge, and that leads people to the wrong conclusion that you have to ascertain all the knowledge contained in these scriptures, and that's how you get enlightened. But as we've said again and again and again and again, this is not about enlightenment, is not the result of the acquisition of knowledge. And I know that statement goes contrary to many interpretations of Shankara's teachings, but it is so true. Now, enlightened, in fact, Shankara himself says, jnanam eva mokshaha. Moksha is through knowledge alone, but knowledge in the sense that, actually, Shankara's use of knowledge here is different than information. Shankara's use of knowledge there means the discovery of your true self. And we've had this discussion before, so we won't stretch it out. But this word vidhana removes that confusion, because vidhana means method. These teachings, have you heard me say before, are a method of guiding your personal process of self-inquiry to lead you to look within and discover what the ancient rishis discovered. The word jnanam doesn't quite convey all of that, but the word vidhana certainly does. Jnana means knowledge, but vidhana means method. And more than anything else, Vedanta is a method of self-inquiry. Vedanta, as you've heard me say before, Vedanta is not a collection of philosophical teachings. Right? Look at the difference. And that's a conventional understanding. Vedanta is a collection of Vedantic teachings. Not! Vedanta is a method of self-inquiry. So, one who gains a knowledge, that Brahman, that one who discovers one's true nature as being not acceptable and not negatable, yatoktena vidhanena, through the methodology described in his teachers, saha satyam na eva jayate, that person most satyam, truly, most certainly, it's used as an adverb here, that person absolutely is not najayate, is not born again, not subject to rebirth. Shankara here referring to the condition we call videha mukti, the liberation after you drop the body at the end of your life. We contrast that with jivan mukti, liberation while you're alive. And we often focus on videha, on jivan mukti, the freedom that you enjoy here and now, the freedom in knowing whatever is going on in your mind or body doesn't affect you at all. That inner freedom is called here jivan mukti, and we often emphasize that because, this is a little technical point, other schools of Vedanta, like Vishishta Dvaita and Dvaita Vedanta, do not stress jivan mukti. In fact, Dvaita Vedanta denies it altogether and says the only way you get liberation is at the end of your life by going to Vaikuntha Loka, by going to some heavenly domain. So to focus on the uniqueness of Advaita Vedanta, we often stress jivan mukti, freedom while being alive. Now, that being so, And I'm leading up to an interesting point here. These three verses where Shankara is talking about the benefits, the phala of these teachings, he focuses on Videha Mukti and not Jivan Mukti. And that seems, at least it seems to me, unusual to put so much emphasis on Videha Mukti. It's emphasized in other traditions, we would understand. But that Shankara is emphasizing it here at the end of the chapter seems a little bit unusual. And when I see something unusual like that, I, for myself, I tried to understand it, and the commentator didn't mention anything about it. So let me share with you an interesting observation. And that is, Videha Mukti is considered to be superior to Jivan Mukti. Why? Now, what are the fancy words? What are we saying? That moksha after your body dies is considered to be superior to moksha while you still have your body hanging around. Why? And the answer is, because while your body is still present, there is the appearance of separation, the appearance of duality, the experience of duality. Right? Right now, if you happen to be enlightened, and you might be, I have no idea, but if you are enlightened, you will continue to experience duality. Absolutely. And that experience of duality gives rise to the sense of being separate or individual from the whole. The sense, the feeling, an apparent sense. It's not real. If you're enlightened, you know it's just a feeling. You know, sometimes feelings aren't real. You get these funny sensations in your body. They come, especially people get this during meditation. Sensations come and go in the body. Okay, they come and go. Who cares? They're just sensations. They're not real. So the enlightened person might have the feeling of being separate or individual. The enlightened person knows, however, that it's just a sensation and doesn't take it seriously, like an itch. It's just a sensation. So after the body dies, there's no possibility of experiencing duality. There's no possibility of having that false sense of separation. Gone forever. And for that reason, the Deha Mukti, that is the liberation after death, is considered superior for that reason. And that's perhaps why Shankara is stressing it here in this chapter, at the end of this chapter, as he does in the next verse. Janmamrit Yupravaheshu, Janmamrityupravaheshu, Patito Naiva Shaknuyat, Patito Naiva Shaknuyat, Ita Uddhartumatmanam, Ita Uddhartumatmanam, Jnanadhanyena Kenachata, Jnanadhanyena Kenachata. This very poetic language. Patitaha, one who has fallen. Fallen into what? Janma mrityu pravaheshu. Into the pravaha, into the flow of janma and mrityu, the current of worldly life. Pravaha flow is usually said to be the flow of a river, the current of the river, inexorably carrying you from birth to death, to birth to death, to birth and death. In each birth, you are subject to suffering. There's elsewhere, Shankara gives another metaphor. Instead of pravaha, he talks about it being more like a whirlpool. And the significance of a whirlpool is you keep going round and around and around. Pravaha means you're going downstream. So in a way, this whirlpool is a better metaphor because you're stuck. You don't go any, you're just going round and round and round. And then he continues, na eva shaknuyat, it is not possible to uddhartum, to lift oneself, atmanam, to lift oneself, ittaha, out of that whirlpool. So you're stuck in a whirlpool, you're just going round and round, and it's impossible to extract yourself. I think it's definitely Shankara, and I think it's in Viveka Chudamani, where he gives us this whirlpool metaphor. And he gives the example, I think, I haven't studied that text for many, many years, but someplace he talks about an insect stuck in that whirlpool. How will the insect get out? On your own, you've had it. So he's in this metaphor, he describes that a passerby, one who is kripalu, a very kind passerby, comes, sees this insect stuck in a whirlpool, plucks the insect out of the whirlpool and puts it up on the side. That kripalu, that kind bystander person, representing in this metaphor the guru. And it happens to work like that. Without some assistance, it's unlikely that you will extract yourself from this whirlpool of life and death, showing the importance of the guru. You know, some people resist this. Why is a guru necessary? And we definitely see in some extraordinary circumstances people getting enlightened without a guru. But those are extraordinary people in extraordinary circumstances, those stories. If you are an ordinary person in an ordinary circumstance, like me, you need all the help we can get. So it's very pragmatic. You know, when a guru is available to help you, what is the point of saying, oh, we don't need a guru? To me, it's counterintuitive. Anyways, nice metaphor. The guru lifts you like the passerby lifts the insect out of this whirlpool, the guru lifts you out of this cycle of birth and death. Of course, every metaphor has a limitation, as we've discussed so many times, and a guru doesn't physically lift you up. In fact, if you want me to lift you up, you're out of luck. I'm not very strong. But that's not what the metaphor is about. The guru is the one who blesses you, imparts unto you the knowledge which breaks you free from the cycle of birth and death. That's what the last line says. Jnanat anyena kena chit. Now we have to contain na eva. You have to bring down that na. So it is impossible to extract yourself from this whirlpool of birth and death, jnanat anyena kena chit, by any means other than knowledge. Jnanat eva, by any means other than knowledge. Now, just to reflect on the earlier statement, jnanadeva mokshaha, when Shankara says that the only way to get enlightenment is jnanam, excuse me, jnanam in a sense of personal discovery, some people resist, saying that sounds awfully dogmatic. It's like when the Christian says the only way to salvation is through Jesus. That's pretty dogmatic. You've heard that before. Here, Shankara says the only way to liberation is through knowledge. So, is Advaita Vedanta as dogmatic as Christianity? And we've discussed at great length how the problem is ignorance. The problem is the failure to, the problem that causes suffering is failure to recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Due to that ignorance, avidya, kama, karma, some of you remember that sequence? Due to that ignorance of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, due to that avidya, you naturally perform karma. You try to solve your problems and come out of that suffering. And due to avidya, you have kama, desire, sorry. You desire freedom from suffering. You desire all the goodies in life that can make you feel better. And you desire to avoid all the things in life that can make you feel worse, kama. So from avidya comes kama. From kama comes karma, because you act on those desires. And from karma comes this whirlpool, because you keep collecting more karmas, which cause you to get reborn. Reborn ignorant, kama, karma, reborn ignorant, kama, karma. And this is that whirlpool. And here, the simple point is this. The statement, jnanat eva mokshaha, jnanam eva mokshaha, is not dogmatic, because it can clearly be demonstrated that this fundamental problem, as my guru liked to call it, is ignorance. If the problem is ignorance, the solution is knowledge. If your plant is all shriveled and dry, the solution, I can proclaim, the solution is water. Is that dogmatic? The solution is water. That's not dogmatic. The plant is dried out and shriveling. So don't, just because it may sound dogmatic, doesn't make it dogmatic. Okay, let us continue. Bhidyate hridaya grantish, bhidyate hridaya grantish, chidyante sarva samshaya, chidyante sarva samshaya, kshiyante chasya karmani, kshiyante chasya karmani, tasmin drishta iti shutehe, tasmin drishta. If you studied the Mundaka Upanishad, that would sound very familiar. It's one of the verses most commonly quoted from that important Upanishad. We taught it here long, long ago. The Upanishad says, is describing enlightenment. We're talking about the phala, the benefit, the fruits of these teachings. And the rishi here, Tirshankara, is quoting the ancient rishi, the rishi who says, bhidyante, bhidyate, hridaya grantihi. Granti, you may know, is knot. But this is not an ordinary knot. This is a knot in your heart. And a knot in your heart is not the kind that you treat through cardiac surgery. The knot in your heart is a metaphor for ignorance. So heart is frequently used as a metaphor for mind. So what is a knot in your mind? Ignorance. So hridaya grantihi means ignorance, to use my guru's terms, self non-recognition. Ignorance. And that self non-recognition, bidyate, gets severed. You cut a knot, and here you sever that ignorance. Then following that, chidyante sarva samshayaha, sarva all samshayaha, all doubts, chidyante are cut away as a result. When the knot of ignorance is dissolved, all doubts fail to persist. Do you have any doubt that I'm sitting in front of you? Yeah, we don't doubt what we have discovered. However, if you came in here with your eyes closed, you may hear me talking, but you don't know for sure. I'm sitting here. I just go for these silly examples. I don't know where they come from. Imagine you came here with your eyes closed, and you're sitting here right now with your eyes closed. You hear my voice, but it could be a recording. So you have some doubt. Is he really sitting there, or is it a recording? There was a commercial about 30 or 40 years ago. Is it live, or is it Memorex? Memorex was a brand of recording tape. Do any of you remember that commercial? Long ago. Who uses recording tape nowadays? Anyway, let's see how old that commercial is. Anyway, when you open your eyes and you see me sitting here, it's not possible to have any doubts. Chidyante sarva samshayaha. Then chiyante sarcha asya karmani asya, for that person, karmani, all of the past karmas, the infinite amount of sanchita karmas, which has been keeping you going in that whirlpool for an infinite number of prior lives, all of that, kshiyante, gets removed, gets destroyed. Isn't it interesting that the length of time you've been in that whirlpool is irrelevant to getting out? If you just fell in, or if you've been in that whirlpool for thousands of years, thousands of revolutions, it makes no difference. In an instant, with the guru's help, you are removed from that. Then the suggestion here is, no matter how much karma you have collected, according to the doctrine of karma, you have an infinite collection of infinite store, as it were, of karma, but it doesn't make any difference. In an instant, all of that goes away, like when the guru plucks the insect from the whirlpool. Tasmin drishte parapare is how the verse comes in the Mundaka Upanishad. Tasmin drishte, when this is seen, discovered. And here again, nice to use that word drishta. In fact, often used, Shankara likes the word jnanam. Shankara was a great scholar. You can not be surprised that Shankara would be very inclined to use the word jnanam. The ancient rishis were not so inclined to use the word jnanam. This word drishta is more often used. Seen, discovered. Interesting, I've never thought about this before, this comparison. Before, the orientation of a great scholar like Shankaracharya and the earliest of the rishis who personally discovered these truths. The ancient rishis are most likely to use terminology like this. Tasmin drishte, when this is discovered, when what is discovered? Para apare, when the ultimate truth is discovered, and the apara, the so-called lower truth, refers to worldly existence. To discover that worldly existence depends entirely on Brahman for its existence, that's how the verse concludes. Iti shutehe, thus it is said in the Mundaka Upanishad. And that leads us to the very last verse of chapter 15. We have a longer meter here. Mamahamit Yetarapoha Sarvato. Mamahamit Yetarapoha Sarvato. Vimukta Deham Paramam Baropamam. Vimukta Deham Baroparam. Sudrishta Shastranumitibhya Hiritam. Sudrishta Shastranumitibhya Hiritam. Vimuchyate Smin Yarinishchito Naraha. Vimuchyate Smin Yarinishchito Naraha. In the last time, yadi, if asmin nishchitaha, if you are firmly established in this truth, then naraha, a person, vimuchyate, is liberated. Nishchita, being firmly established, this perhaps hints at the necessity for nididhyasana. Earlier chapters in our text have focused a lot on nididhyasana. The chapters we've seen more recently are more focused on manana. So we understand shravana, manana, nididhyasana as being the main practices of Advaita Vedanta. Here he says, mama aham iti etat apohya sarvataha. Etat apohya, having negated this sarvataha completely, having completely negated what? Mama aham iti. Mama, mine. Aham, I. And these two little words are often used to describe the problem of identification. And the problem of identification is so obvious from a Vedantic perspective. Whatever you are identified with becomes a source of suffering. You know, if you're identified with your car and somebody dents it in the parking lot, it becomes a problem. If you're not identified with your car, if it's just a vehicle, suppose it's a rental. If you've rented the car, you're not identified with it. Who kids got another dent? That's what happens in parking lots. So this is a problem of identification. You're identified with your car, you suffer. This one will strike at least some of you. If you're identified with your grown children, you will suffer. Why grown children? Even young children. When your children are sick, when your children are having difficulties. Children are not you. They're individual living beings with their own karma, their own free will. But when the parent becomes identified, you know, children are supposed to be a source of happiness, aren't they? How often children become a source of suffering? Problem of identification. Then more obviously, when you identify with your body, body's got problems, you suffer. You identify with your prana, your life force, problem. You suffer. You identify with the condition of your mind, you suffer. And if you don't identify with any of that, if your vision is, I am unchanging consciousness, and the problems of my mind, my prana, my body, my children, and my car don't affect me at all, where is the suffering? Freedom of suffering is due to disidentification. And that's what Shankara describes here in that first line. Etadapohya, having removed all kinds of identification, vimukta Shrishta Deham Param Ambara Upamam. Sudrishta, I have to get the verb here. Sudrishta Shastra Anumitibhyaha Iritam. That participle is a verb. Iritam. What is described here in this chapter, for one who has removed all identification, that's the first line, for that person who has removed or having, and just be more grammatical here, this chapter, having removed all identification, and iditam, having declared the padam in the middle of the second line. Having declared the padam, the state. What kind of state? Vimukta deham. The state of enlightenment following the fall of the body. The deha mukti. And I explained before that Shankara puts unusual emphasis on Videha Mukti here for the reasons I described. And that is, generally Videha Mukti is considered higher, more desirable than Jivan Mukti while you have the body. So this padam, the state which is Ambara Upamam, the state which is like space, is Vimukta Deham. The state of Videha Mukti has been declared by this chapter, which is like space. And that's a nice metaphor because, as I said before, in the presence of the body, there is a seeming separation, an apparent separation, an experiential separation, which is not real, but it is experienced. How many times have we discussed? Just because you experience it, it's not real. You can see the sun go down and know it's not real. You can experience having a body and experience the duality and separation that requires. But if you're enlightened, you know it's not real. You're enlightened about the sunset, right? Especially after having heard in this class how many times I've given this, I have no doubt that when you watch the sun go down, you remember our discussion and you remind yourself, oh, it's an optical illusion. The sun is stationary in the sky. You get it. You're enlightened about sunsets. Good. Suppose you're enlightened about this false sense of individuality. You don't take it seriously. So that's the enlightened person's experience of having a body is just an experience. It's not taken any more seriously than the experience of the sunset. Okay? Then, Yiditam, what is described in this chapter, is Sudrishta Shastra Anumitibhyaha. It is taught according to Sudrishta, that which is well seen, well understood. And what is well understood? Shastra and Anumiti. Anumiti is another word for reasoning. So yukti. Again and again, we talked about shruti, yukti, anubhava. Shastra is shruti. Anumiti is yukti. Notice he doesn't include anubhava here. Anubhava was discussed in those chapters on nididhyasana. That's not the subject of this particular chapter. So he talks about shastra and anumiti, shruti and yukti were the main subject matters of this chapter. Other chapters, especially those earlier chapters on nididhyasana, talked extensively about anubhava. So elsewhere, anubhava has been discussed. And in this way, naraha, a person who is nishchetaha, who is well established, dasmin in these teachings, that person, vimuchyate, is freed, is liberated. Okay. So that brings us to the end of the current chapter. We have a few minutes here. Let me just pause to see, do you have any questions on these four verses that we've just discussed? You're okay? We usually don't take questions. We have a few extra minutes. Yes?
Swami, in the past I heard that Jivan Mukti is more important than Vidya Mukti because we can experientially verify it.
Right.
But here it's like contradictory.
So it depends on what is your criteria. One is better than the other according to what? It's absolutely true that Jivan Mukti is not more verifiable. It is verifiable as opposed to the fact that Videha Mukti is not experientially verifiable. But verifiable is not something you enjoy. It's a proof. So what you said is correct, and that is Jivan Mukti, and let me just discuss this just for the last few minutes of this class. Jivan Mukti, liberation while you're alive, is experientially verifiable. You can experience that inner freedom. You can know that nothing that happens in the world to your body or mind, none of that affects consciousness in any way whatsoever. It is experientially verifiable. That's Jivan Mukti. Is the Deha Mukti verifiable? As Surya Kant correctly said, no. Because it's a condition after you die. And after you die, there's no verification possible. According to the scriptures, we are told that you're not reborn. And if you ask, how do I know for sure? You can't pick up. We have to admit, it is not experientially verifiable. However, in defense of the scriptures, if the scriptures were right about your true nature being Satchidananda Atma, so that you can gain that Jivan Mukti, if you are a Jivan Mukta, and somebody tells you that Videha Mukti is not verifiable, if you are a Jivan Mukta, you say, who cares? What's the point? So, you can enjoy, and enjoyment means you can be blessed by the benefits of these teachings, by being liberated while you're alive. When your body falls, according to the scripture, you're not reborn again. There's no way to experientially verify it that, which is absolutely true. But that wasn't my point about Shankara emphasizing Videha Mukti because it's considered superior. And if you remember the argument, Videha Mukti is considered superior because there is not even a shadow of separation possible. Right now, there's still, even for an enlightened being, there's still the experience of duality. Even though you know that experience is false, it's still present in your experience. And just to amplify that, does an enlightened person experience pain? Enlightened person won't suffer because of the pain, but the pain is still experienced. The enlightened person will very clearly know that the pain belongs to the body and mind. The enlightened person will know the presence of pain doesn't detract one iota from my fullness and completeness, but the pain is still present in experience. And for that reason, Videha Mukti is considered superior because there's no possibility of pain, no experience of duality, no separation whatsoever. Okay, this is a good place to conclude our class. I'll introduce next week's class next week. Doesn't make sense to do it right now, so we'll conclude with a prayer. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om tat sat. Very good.